Hello, and welcome to We Cut Heads, a spiky podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is he's a plucky young entertainer. I picked him off the street. He's tap dancing. And now
You don't mind if I'm in blackface for this recording, do you?
No, you need to be. It's necessary.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, I looked up the historical context. I'm doing everything authentically, so I think that means that's perfectly fine.
It's A-okay.
I've got at least one black friend.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Joel. I'm not really in blackface. I wouldn't do that.
I'd hope not. So this is the year 2000 pairing of Bamboozled and not Gladiator, but Dancer in the Dark, the Lars von Trier movie.
Yeah. And, very similar to Gladiator, though.
Yeah. I was secretly hoping for Gladiator, so I can have an excuse to finally watch it. You know, I've seen, like, we'll have a guest for the Dancer in the Dark, Alexandria Daniels. Yeah, so Bamboozled. As you know, I might be a fan of this movie a little bit.
Didn't you say it's, like, your favorite movie ever made?
It's up there.
Oh.
I'd go top 10 for me. Easy.
But it's certainly your favorite Spike Lee movie.
Yes. Yeah. I would say I like this more than Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing.
Hmm. I say I liked it. It's not... Like, I like what it deals with in material more than... A bit more than how the movie ends, but I think that's my biggest problem, the way the movie ends.
Yeah, I can see that the ending is... Well, what do you mean, like, what happens to the character?
The way... no, not, I mean, not just the character, like the... I don't know, I feel like he didn't... It almost feels like he didn't feel like he was going to be able to come to a conclusion that was effective on us, so he was like, take it to 10 or whatever, which he does. I mean, that's not that weird for Spike Lee, but it, I don't know, but like, it doesn't take away from the rest of the movie, which is great.
I mean, I like the end because it's just a reminder of this never ends, and it's like this showing, like a, you know, because like the TV cuts of a lot of classic movies cut out the blackface stuff. And...
Oh no, that part's great. That's okay. Yeah, I dug that part. I'm talking about the what happens. Yeah, what the characters basically.
Oh yeah, that part is. I don't know. It's necessary, I guess, but it's also like, you know. Oh, like, this is might be his messiest movie, but in the best way.
I don't think it's his messiest. I mean, we've seen She Hate Me.
Oh, yeah, that is true. That might be the messiest.
It's like, what is the message you're going here for? Men and lesbians can work together. No, I don't know.
Yeah, corporate America is bad or something. I don't know where to start. Because this was kind of like...
Why don't you tell me the plot?
In a nutshell, it was... the plot is a frustrated a black writer, TV producer, is tired of being... tired of his job at this TV network in New York. And he decides to make a Mitchell show so he can get fired to prove his point that his boss and the people above him are racist and don't see black people as equal, more or less. And then the Mitchell show becomes a huge success, and there are ramifications to the show's success.
Yeah. For the character and for a little bit of society there.
Yeah, you get enough of a glimpse of a society where it's like, yeah, this could happen.
Hmm. for sure.
Yeah, like...
I mean, like, I'm watching this... And the way the audience is reacting when they're filming basically the pilot of it, and it's like in that audience, I felt like most of the black members of the audience that they showed were like actually kind of into it, like seemed like they were taking it for the satire it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But like all the uncomfortable looks that every other person of any other race was giving them.
And the first person you see clap is a black person, and then you have that the white woman next to him just looking over uncomfortably, like, "Is it okay for me to clap now?"
Like this doesn't seem right. It's like, "Yep, it's wrong."
I wanted a guest first episode. Who literally wrote the book on it, Ashley Clark, but he's super busy because he's a writer, critic, and does the whole bunch of film stuff in New York. And runs the same circle as some previous guests we've had. But I have read his book. I read it on a plane. Right, it's a pretty short book, and it's just like it for me. Like the book just cemented. So the book Facing Blackness by Ashley Clark just made me appreciate the movie so much more, because like a lot of it I kind of picked up on, but then some aspects of it like he gets into this like how it's still very relevant now in terms of like because minstrelsy never died, it just kind of changed forms, and this is us showing like the old school form of minstrelsy, but the book brings up like what's that show called? Housewives of Atlanta, and it brings up like A Flavor of Love and like Tyler Perry and like that type of stuff, where it's like that's still like in gangster rap, and how that's all this minstrelsy just under a different face, where you're not doing a blackface anymore, but it's still the same reinforcing all the bad stereotypes. And that's the stuff that's the most successful, and you can't really. And on one hand, like you want to blame the people who are participating in it as like you're just making everyone look bad. But at the same time, if you want to be successful, then it's like, well, you kind of have to do that, because that's the way American media works if you're not white.
What do you like about the movie?
On a personal note, I like that that's how I learned about blackface minstrelsy, because that just like kickstarted a whole journey into like a big part of American history that no one really talks about, unless you like really like get go through like certain college courses or like learn on your own, because I think because it's basically minstrelsy was cultural slavery. It's just like it really peaked after the Civil War. And it's just like another form of like keeping them in their place, more or less.
Mm.
And this just brings up all that ugly history, and it brings up like the whole Mitchell shows just like references to like the Mitchell to like famous performers and famous acts, and like there's a whole thing of like in my research I've learned like it was common to do like a blackface Abraham Lincoln routine, or like a hoop. Yeah, that was, like, a kind of a thing. And you get that in the movie. You get the name. Like, he goes from Man Ray to Mantan, who we talked about in the Watermelon Man episode.
Yeah, Watermelon
Man. Mantan was in that. Mm-hmm. They're sleeping neat. That's a reference to Willie Best, who was, a blackface. I think it did blackface, but he was, like... he did, like, the Mantan roles in the 1930s. You know, it's, like... The more you dig into history, the more you just learn, like, this movie has so many references to that era of American history.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's very confrontational, that within the first 5 minutes, you get Michael Rapaport saying nigger to Damon Wayans' face 5 times, just to prove a point. where, like, in Dear White People, they have a moment like that, but it's done in voiceover, where where the person's not talking to anyone directly, and that's, like, halfway through the movie, and in this movie, it's 5 minutes, and it's direction in your face, and it's just, like, a good barometer of what this movie is gonna be.
Yeah.
I like the rough experimental look of it, because it's, like, shot on super cheap digital camera.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah, it made it stand out. It made everything look this flat television way, almost, that I thought was actually beneficial to the movie.
It does add to the media thing, because the media is, like, one of the major themes going through it. And then the minstrel show part is shot on film and looks notably different. Mm-hmm. And apparently
that is cool.
Yeah, and apparently they did, like, the transfer of the DV into 35mm. And, like, that process makes it look even uglier, which I've seen some people...
Worked.
Yeah, I've seen some people complain they think the movie looks too ugly and they can't get into it, but I don't know. I get where they're coming from, but at the same time, it makes sense with the movie's trying to do.
Yeah, I found it, like, super appealing that they, you know, Spike Lee is no stranger to filmmaking, so, like, that is a choice he made, and it... I just enjoyed that it was not the typical. The film didn't look like a typically shot film because of that.
I like the cast a whole lot. I like Damon. This is, I don't know, where do you fall in Damon Wayans' accent in this movie? That's kind of a big divisive point for a lot of people.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it didn't take me out of the movie or anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, I like that choice, because it's, we can get to more into later, but I like it's a bold choice, because this movie is nothing but big, bold choices, and, I mean, like, Damon Wayans is great, Jada Pinkett is great, although she doesn't get enough stuff to do, really, especially, like, towards the end, but, Mos Def, you know, this, like, this is the whole cast, you get, Tommy Davidson, actually, like, not... doing a real performance instead of just being, like, the funny guy. Do you know who that Tommy Davidson is?
I don't know.
He was the other homeless guy who wasn't a tap dancer.
Right.
He's a comedian. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
And he was on In Living Color, which they make a joke about that in the movie.
Yeah. I recognized him. I didn't know his name.
No. Did you recognize any other rappers besides Mos Def?
No.
Did you recognize Mos Def?
Of course I recognized. That's not what his name is, but yes, I know who you're talking about.
I think he did change his name in the last few years.
Yeah, he abandoned the Mos Def title, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He's going by... I looked it up, and now I can't remember. Yeah, I mean, I like him a lot as an actor, so...
Yosin Bey, I think, is what he goes by now. Anyway, so that I... it ties into other Spike movies, and I don't know, another divisive thing I've seen is people find, like, the Tarantino line to be a little too much. I don't know, I like it.
I mean, he's calling him out. Like, it's Spike Lee. What do you expect?
Yeah.
And he should be called out. It's not like, I mean, that's not an unpopular opinion now.
Yeah.
That, I mean, in the movie it's basically saying, like, he can say it, why can't I say it, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he shouldn't be saying it.
Yeah, and Terrence did a great score, as always. I'm just like, everything for me in this movie totally works. I love the complex message. Oh, and Paul Mooney is great. Do you know who Paul Mooney is?
Yes.
Okay. He's a comedian, so I'm never sure if you know or not.
No, I don't know any comedians, basically. But I know actors...
You know Paul Mooney, too.
Right.
Okay, yeah. So, I guess we can get into first, like, the whole... I don't know, where do you want to go? Like, the...
Well, one of the good things about this is that I feel like we had less of Spike's... the kind of trope things that we're used to. Like, there was no... there wasn't any love scenes in this movie, right? No sex scenes or...
Nope. They talked about it.
I don't even remember. Nudity, which is... He usually finds a way.
cat was trying to get into the cabinet about to fall.
Yeah, your cat loves it.
Yeah, it's her favorite cabinet.
Anyways, I feel like he usually tries to find it. He finds a way to shoehorn in at least some bear breasts. And it did not happen in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And what is going on over there?
I'm going to get her again. Wait a second.
All right.
Don't squeeze in there. Leave that alone.
She's trying to squeeze into a cardboard box that's inside another cardboard box.
That sounds like a cat.
Okay, you're saying something about the nudity or something?
No, I wasn't saying anything about that. How dare you? I was going to say, I also feel like you were saying that I almost made a big mistake. Jada Pinkett Smith's character didn't have much to do, but I do think she, for a Spike movie, like, we didn't over sexualize her. Like, they did try to do the shame thing that he does with the women characters, but usually I feel like in the movies we've watched, it's like, not only does, you know, the men do something stupid where, like, men are stupid, but also the women end up doing something, like, that makes us turn against them somehow.
Yeah.
And that does not happen with her until, like, not even the end with her turn is that, like, extreme enough for me to be like, I don't like her character or anything like that. I do think that part at the end is weird for her character to do, but...
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. I feel like there's a couple scenes missing there, definitely. Okay, well, what did you think of, like, the whole, like discussion of blackface that the movie deals with?
Well, how do you mean?
Like, do you...
Do I think blackface should be normal? Yes. Yes, I do. I'm one of those people.
No, like, I'm
finally having it out on this podcast.
No, like, do you think, this will be a dumb question, but do you think Spike was responsible in how he dealt with blackface in the movie?
I mean, I feel like he does an excellent job of, like, laying out history and showing the ridiculousness of, like, he doesn't pull any punches. Like, it is a racist caricature, and he shows almost all the bad aspects you could show in it. And he makes an entertaining movie. Like, it's a conflicting situation because, like, I don't know about you, but I found the actions that those guys were doing in their production in blackface, I found the jokes to be funny sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, same. And you get this, like, tinge of, like, oh, man, I should not be laughing at this.
Yeah.
Like, these are good performers. Like, I don't know. So I think that's an excellent little twist in a movie, you know, there's just so many mixed emotions you get out of it.
Yeah, like...
Right, but it's not... an irresponsible person would make it seem like, you know what, maybe blackface isn't so bad, but this movie doesn't do that.
Yeah, like, he fully embraces it to the point that you see a whole audience of people in blackface. And yeah, it's like, it's horrifying, but it's like, the American TV watchers are that dumb that this could actually happen.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel that out of the ordinary, especially with who's president now. It's like, yeah, I feel like, I will get kind of personal, but, like, when Trump was elected, part of me was thinking, like, will Metro City and blackface make a comeback? I really was thinking, like, that could happen, given the type of person he is and his fan base.
Only thing we got from this so far is orange face. Yeah, we're lucky.
Yeah. But, like, you get that amazing scene with Thomas Jefferson Byrd, which is probably my favorite Thomas Jefferson Byrd character in a Spike movie. He was in Just We Bled Jesus very briefly. I think he's like the driver, and he works at the church. Mm-hmm. And he's in He Got Game. He's a pimp. What else?
He's really been. Is he the guy who shows up in all basically almost all of them? Or am I mixing him up with a different actor?
That's a different guy. Bird's not in that many. And he's like maybe 15, 20 years older than Spike. He's the dad and She's Unhappy in the series. He's a theater actor.
I don't remember.
Mainly, he's a theater actor now. I think he's been slowing down with doing movies. Because I think he's won a Tony, or he's been nominated for a Tony. But anyway, he's Honeycutt, and the thing that I love with the Honeycutt character is that he's like the type of person who wants an opportunity for success presents himself, he will immediately jump on that chance, no matter what. You have that really horrible moment where they're painting Honeycutt over Sleeping Eight's door, and Man Ray is like, "Seriously, you're doing this already?" And then Michael Rapaport's like, "Hey, you're a new star," and he is like, "Okay." And he just follows it, and he has zero issues with it. And just this horrible, insidious character is like, yeah, these people.
Yeah.
But, there's a whole sequence of him in an audience when around blackface, and he is like, are you a nigga? And then, everyone has their different response, and, you have the Italian guy, the eggplant thing. And it's like, oh, yeah. God. It's so uncomfortable, but also pretty funny. It's ghosts, though.
I have Spike is making me hate Italian people, and I don't think I know any Italian people. At least not no stereotypical Brooklyn Italian people, because they're all pretty terrible in his movies.
Yeah, Italians never. I'm trying to think. I was gonna say, do they ever look good? Yeah, I can't.
I mean, the closest that we've seen is maybe Adrian Brody's character in Summer of Sam.
Hmm.
But he's got his own problems.
Yeah.
And then, John. What is the name of it? Yeah, there you go. John Turturro in. The one we just watched.
Oh, Jungle Fever.
Yeah. He's not the worst.
Yeah.
But he's still no sterling example.
No, he's still a racist, which you get a couple moments where it's he's upset that his woman is with a black man. And you can see it's it's still in there. He's definitely nicer than the rest.
Yeah.
But I like that you get the reprise of the John Turturro character from Do Your Right Thing and Michael Rapaport. This gets amped up even more. And Michael Rapaport is a garbage man, mm-hmm. as in he's terrible, and I don't like that he became a meme because he's a terrible person.
I don't know his story. What's wrong with him?
He thinks he's cool with black people, and he kind of took that privilege.
In real life?
Yeah, he's kind of playing himself now. Oh. Yeah, he and Spike don't really get along anymore, which is good, because he's fucking annoying. But the whole thing with, the Michael Rapaport TV producer, VP guy, He it's just amped up even more where he's the racism is so internalized. He's but I'm one of you guys. It's yeah. And you have all the sports stuff. hanging in his office, and you see like African art everywhere, and it's just like he's trying so hard, but he's so racist, and it's like, yeah.
He thinks he's the white guy in the BLAK crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy was white, right?
I'm pretty sure MC Search, who is a rapper playing that character, is white.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a really good part at the to cut straight to the end there when everyone's getting shot, but like, why didn't you shoot me? Like every single other person.
Yeah, the MC Search plays 1/16th black in the Mau Maus. Which, do you know the reference of the Mau Maus? Do you know what that is? During the fight for independence in Kenya, that was a group fighting the British. And I think in Taxi Driver, there's a scene of someone, like, referring to black people as Mau Maus. I think it's Taxi Driver. Or maybe Main Street, because both the movies have a couple, like, racist Italians in them. Right. I think, like, in Mean Streets, is it De Niro says nigger, or is it Keitel? One of them says it, I think.
It's De Niro.
Yeah, sure. Probably would be De Niro. His character in that. But, yeah, MC Search plays 1/16th black, and I love, there's like, it was like hard black, big black Africa, smooth black, and yeah, they're na- like they're it's so cartoonish, and like it's such a parody of rap of that era, and I like the inclusion of having them in it, because it's basically Spike's way of saying like hip hop culture is also minstrel, which apparently made some rappers some rapper, I don't know who, but like apparently some were not happy with bringing that up.
You know, I can't say whether or not it's an unfair observation. But
I mean, it's a valid observation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's but like every I remember the first time I watched this, like the whole PC culture thing really threw me off, because like I didn't know like the whole PC people complaining about that went to the 90s. I thought that was more of a like 2010s thing.
No, I mean that all basically started like in the Bill Clinton era, as far as I know.
And like the whole all the arguments against it in this movie, the ignorant characters who hate it, it's like all the same, like the argument has not evolved since then. It's still the same, it's pretty interesting to be like, oh, this has not changed at all in like 30, almost 30 years at this point. What did you think of the look of the movie? If you can elaborate a little more, or did you say all your piece on it?
Well, I talked about the way the camera looked, which is very noticeable. Like, I feel like somebody who wasn't that into movies might still think there was something wrong with their TV or something like that. You know, the flatness of it all. But it didn't seem like there were that many different locations that they were shooting on when I think about it. Like, it mostly this kind of like boardroom, and then the office that Delacroix has, which just more and more of that. Is there a name for that kind of junk he's acquiring?
Should know.
Just racist memorabilia.
Yeah, I should know, but like apparently. Yeah, I don't know if there's a name for that besides, like, I don't know, minstrel toys? I don't know. But apparently that's Spike's personal collection.
Interesting.
Because yeah. I guess maybe the thinking is it's better that he has it instead of a racist person using it for their own purposes.
Sure, yeah.
I think I hear, like, Oprah collects it, too. There are some, like, high, like, super rich, high up there, like, black, like, entertainers and stuff who do collect that kind of... I probably just out of, like, to make sure it doesn't go into the wrong hands.
Get it all and destroy it.
Which, no, did you get a scene of that, of Delacroix destroying it?
Yeah. If that was his actual collection, some of that stuff was actually being destroyed there, so. Yeah. It's interesting. Oh, there was... one of the things, we were talking about, you know, digital camera and the flat look of it. I wasn't quite ready for film and almost. Another thing that they do that's not quite ready for film is they do some really terrible computer, like, animation stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I was so into that, like, I mean, you know, worse than Food Fight style black caricatures. Garbage that they showed. And then when Delacroix was like hallucinating, they also did like a really bad computer animated version of that bank he had.
Yeah. Although
I was delighted by that. I don't know if it's not up there with the sperm with the person's face on it.
No.
But, you know.
But yeah, that didn't age well, but I don't know. I don't think you could really blame him for that. Because, like, it's supposed to be, like, a state-of-the-art show. So I guess it's right. Also 2000, so. Like, you had Pixar, yeah. And you had everyone else at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like with the whole TV, the TV, like, production angle of it, that the set designer on their show is white, and he's, like, he's Scandinavian white, like, he's so pale, and his hair is so blonde, and it's, like, it's just such a funny little character that you see a couple times.
Yeah. And, like, the script changes. Like, oh, this guy, he knows. He's done shows before, okay? Like, yeah. I already have a boardroom full of white people.
Yeah, and, like...
I guess there were a bunch of famous people in that, like, scripting scene, too.
There are a couple. A.D. Miles, he's a writer and comedian. He's in What Hot American Summer, the movie? Maybe the series. I think he's, like, a head writer for, like, Fallon or one of those people. No. And David Wayne is a stagehand towards the end. From the...
Yeah, I saw him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any lines, right?
He's just, maybe, like, two lines. There. And it's like, is he gonna say nigger? I was like, oh no, he's not. But I kept expecting it.
Like, sure, why not?
Yeah, but like, it... Yeah, that's always a nice... I love seeing this movie because he looks so out of place in a Spike Lee movie.
Yeah.
And who's the other one? I think it's those two. But, like, I mean, Paul Mooney is a comedian, and he's basically playing himself because he's... Paul Mooney can't really act. He's just really funny. And, like, I love his stand-up. You get, like, maybe, what, a couple minutes... Three at the most of a stand-up, but...
So, is he the father, or is he the...
He's Junebug. He's Pierre's dad.
Okay, so he's the one that was on stage, like, who played Abraham Lincoln.
No, that's Honeycutt.
Oh, okay.
His dad was just, like, basically, like, a Rudy Moore, like, did, like, that type of circuit of, like, the black clubs. And that was kind of it, because the whole dilemma with the dad is... He's not a sellout. Who's going to sell his race? He's going to, you know, make modest money and be okay with it.
It's outrageous, I tell you.
which I love the moment where he's like, where the fuck that accent come from? Which feels like...
Yeah. Cause...
I don't think that was scripted. I think that was Paul Mooney improvising in the moment.
Maybe.
That really does feel like something you would say.
Yeah.
And apparently he's a character, and he's difficult to work with. Apparently he's supposed to be on an episode of Black Dynamite, the series, on Adult Swim. But when they got him in, he apparently refused to say what was on the script. And it got to a point where there's like kind of they paid him and he left. And they had to have someone do an impression of him for the episode because it was such a nightmare trying to work with him.
That's fun. Yeah. He's got integrity as an actor.
No. He's just a diva. Did you like see the? Did you notice the Roots were the house band?
Yeah. I mean the one that I can't say what his name was in the movie, but yeah.
The name of the
that guy is very recognizable. The one who was the
Questlove.
Right. Yeah, but his character, I can't say his name. The name of his character.
You mean the band?
Is it the whole band that's
called that? Yeah, it's the whole band. That's the house band.
It's called Clerks 2.
Yeah, it's called Clerks 2. No, it's the Alabama Porch Monkeys is the house band of the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see?
Yeah.
The Alabama Pikachu Monsters.
Yeah, they're taking it back. Yeah. Oh, man, Clerks 2, it has not aged well for me. If you liked it before, don't rewatch it. It does not hold up.
No.
But I like in the whole...
You just have to accept that it's late Kevin Smith and there's nothing you can do about it.
Although, Tusk, I like parts of... But parts of it. I'll leave it at that. I like that during the whole... We're all over the place, but who cares? This movie is all over the place, so it makes sense. But, like, during the Paul Mooney bit, he talks about cultural appropriation, and, like, he gets in that immediately reminding of the Kardashians with... I'm not sure if you would have noticed, but a couple of years ago, box braids became popular because of the Kardashians, and that was what that's an African hairstyle. I'm not sure where it's from. But before it was popular, it was seen as like a lot of black cultural things seen as trashy and low class. But once, you know, the Kardashians do it, you know, it's cool and trendy.
Sure.
And like, yeah, naturally. And like Gwen Stefani is also does the like appropriate black and like Latino culture too. It's like, look at No Doubt in the 90s, and she's kind of doing that back then, too. And and also he mentioned, like, butt injections, which Spike, but in the series, she's on Habit. That's a plot point, and one character gets butt injections.
Oh, you're talking about the exploding butt thing that Sarah refuses to watch ever again?
Yeah.
I honestly don't even remember that. Like, have you actually watched any of the
I watched series? Half of the first season, because it takes me forever to watch series on Netflix.
Well, spoiler alert. The butt explodes.
I'd imagine. What did you think of the two homeless guys in their whole arc? Womack and Man Ray.
Well, I feel like you did a good job. I mean, Womack seems like he's just fine, like, as an actor. Like, I think he knew how to do what he was doing. Man Ray strikes me as somebody who was a dancer, not an actor, and I think he pulls it off pretty damn well.
Yeah, Savon Glover he's a prodigy tap dancer. Mm-hmm. And, like, he
only dances to the music of the Prodigy.
Yes, and he like won an Emmy with Sesame Street, and he is sometimes on Dancing with the Stars. Now, was it so? You think you can dance, Kids edition? And he worked with the kids on that, too. Mm. Doing, like, tap dancing, teaching them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's a... And he shows up on a Prince song doing a tap dance.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a dumb idea, but it kind of works. Because it's pretty cool here to tap, and when you know it's Seven Glover. But anyway, yeah, mm-hmm. You can continue.
Ah, what was it talking about?
Seven...
Oh, whether or not I thought those... they have really good chemistry together. Like, I don't know if they spent a bunch of time together working on their material, but I feel like, you know, when they're doing the show, especially, unfortunately, they work off each other really well.
Yeah, like
I kind of want to see what the rehearsal was like for those parts in the movie.
The Blu-ray is coming out pretty soon. Maybe there'll be extra features of it. I hope so, at least.
Criterion usually does pretty good. Yeah,
and this movie has not been streaming anywhere, ever.
Mm.
And you know, the DVD is kind of the one from the, like, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be the only DVD. Like, this movie, Hollywood tried to bury, because I think it pissed off the wrong people.
Well, you know, I don't know what to say.
I can imagine this rubbing some people the wrong way.
I can't. I don't know why you would say that. I mean, it seems perfectly, you know, normal. I mean, they put on minstrel shows in the movie, and then a bunch of people who are not black definitely put on blackface.
Yeah, it's all. I'm right now looking up the Manton Moreland. Because I have seen the last movie that he appeared in that kind of revived his career very briefly. But,
really?
Yeah, because like, he kind of disappeared for a little bit. And
sure.
And he died a couple years after Watermelon Man. But he...
It's not surprising his career didn't last.
Well, yeah, because the civil rights movement happened and that kind of killed his career.
Yeah.
For better and worse. But he's in Spider Baby, the Jack Hill movie, a couple years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it's like this, like, I think a Corman movie called, like, The Young Nurses or something like that. It's really bad. I watched it just for Manton Moreland, because I knew it was his last movie. And I was just curious, like, does he get to do anything? And no, he doesn't get to do anything. He just plays an old man.
He was an old man. What do you expect?
Yeah. Like, were you offended by the movie? Like, how did you take, like, the aggressive nature of, like, you know, of, like, the whole blackface thing and being, like, just not pulling any punches?
I mean, I don't... I offended would be difficult to do unless I thought I was watching a racist movie. Like, this... is a movie that has racist imagery in it, but it's not done for the purpose of, like, I mean, it's a movie that's made to point out the racism part, so it'd be difficult to, I mean, like, I wouldn't call the movie racist, even though the subject matter is very racist, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's like, it's bringing it up where the movie is called The Young Nurses, so I'm trying to think of. I know, you talked about this like 45 minutes ago, but like during like the menstrual sequences, like I think it was the My Own Grandfather thing, like that routine legitimately makes me laugh. Even though, like, watching it being performed, it's like, I shouldn't be laughing at this. This makes me feel very weird that I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Which I...
Yeah, no, I get it.
And I like the Spike is forcing the audience of, like, basically saying, like, the viewer is also responsible for this, too. Like, he's making you guilty of... of participating and enjoying.
Are you laughing? You're racist. Also, it's funny. So you better be laughing. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I really like the whole routine of the guys trying to, like, they were, like, trying to plan a date or something like that, and the other guy kept interrupting, or they kept interrupting each other before they actually said what they were going to say. Like, you know, I think we'll do it about, that's too late. Oh, well, what about, oh, that's too early. Okay, oh, you're right. No, this time is just right, you know, or something like that. And, yeah.
Yeah.
It had me laughing.
Yeah. Did you watch this with Sarah or alone?
Sarah saw a little bit of it.
I'd be curious her thoughts on it.
You want me to bring her on the microphone?
I don't know if she wants to.
Hold on, let me ask her. Hey, Sarah. Do you want to express any opinion on this movie?
Hey, yo, who that? You're right there. Blue eyes and black hair. Kill him with a rhyme or the bottom of my night gear. So quick, son, pick one. You don't want me to finish. I'll quickly take your 1950 and do you like the British. Head on a spear. Contusions in the air. Call Africa Maxima. I'ma drive you out of here. Mr. 116. Want to kill your self-esteem. Born from part devil, part cracker from Queens. Knowledge that we drop. You don't even...
So you guys have been talking about that movie?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, since he said you saw some of it. I'm curious, like, what you thought of it.
Well, I felt conflicted. When I was watching it, I thought it was a good movie, and that it was, like, making commentary, but the message-y stuff towards the end, I felt like... it kind of got a little bit long-winded for me, even though I completely agree with the message it was giving.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of like, oh, I don't know. Like, I knew that it was coming to a head, like, in the sense that, like, the show had gone too far, and, like, basically everything was going too far at the end, mm-hmm. right? It was kind of spinning out of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought all the actors did a good job, and, like, I liked that. But sometimes the music starts to... I think Spike Lee is really good, but I think that sometimes the music gets a little bit emotive, like... and when it's doing that for a longer period of time, it kind of starts to feel a little bit longer to me, but... I don't know. What did you think about it?
Well, this is my favorite Spike Lee movie.
Seriously?
Yeah. To me, it's perfect. But,
really? Yeah.
But it's also, I have issues with it. But, like, everything it does, I think it does very well.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't see the entire thing. But from what I saw, I felt like, it almost feels like the, like, producers or something, but, like, not funny, like, not meant to be, like, it's taking a subject that's, like, horrible and you don't want to look back on it and, like, turning it around, but, like, in this case, it's, like, history starts to repeat itself instead of, like, being able to look at it and, or, you know, I think just the fact that people were in blackface too was just, like, really uncomfortable for me. And, I mean, I don't know how Joel felt about it, but...
yeah, I'm fine.
Joel's like... but I was like, I don't know, this is, like, super uncomfortable. And all the references at the end were just, like... God, you know there are that many, but you don't, you're like, I really don't want to see it all, because it's so terrible.
Yeah, like, and like, in, like, TCM and, like, TV channels, like, will cut out that stuff in TV broadcasts, so.
Really?
Yeah, like, a lot of the channel, like, a lot of times it's on TV, they cut it out, because during the civil rights movement, Hollywood realized, oh, we should probably take this stuff out, because it makes people uncomfortable. And we were wrong. But it's also complicated because, like, you should keep it in so we know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's complicated.
Yeah, that was the vision of, like, the movie was to put this stuff in that was, like, uncomfortable, but I feel like it is uncomfortable. It's meant to be. But I didn't really feel any of the parts that were, like, funny that Joel was talking about, but I probably didn't see them earlier on. I think it's cool that Marlon Wayans was... It was Marlon Wayans?
Damon
Wayans, sorry. In this one, that he was known for being, like, super hilarious in the 90s and, like, a total, like... On In Living Color, he was always doing sketch comedy and characters. And in this movie, he's, like, super serious and, like, he's the person who's, like, standing next to people doing these over-the-top, like, routines or whatever. Yeah. But it feels... Yeah, it was cool to see him doing something with a message, too.
Yeah.
And who is it? Jada Pinkett, I think, is in it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. She did a good job, too. I know that she's, like, a politically involved person who, like, has a lot of opinions about this kind of thing, and I don't know if she's in other Spike Lee movies.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure this is the only one.
Yeah. But way more... I found it more difficult to watch than BlacKkKlansman, actually.
Yeah, in the BlacKkKlansman episode, me and the guest both say, Bamboozled, it feels like part of BlacKkKlansman.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the connections, and it's like they use older reference material that's, like, super racist and existed in real life. Is that Birth of a Nation that they show in BlacKkKlansman?
They show a little bit in this one.
Yeah, they showed a little bit in this one too. Yeah, I thought all the actors did a great job, but I was thinking it's just a really uncomfortable subject matter because these, like, I saw this art show recently that was on PBS, and it was talking about this performance that someone did during, was it, like, Ronald Reagan's, like, there's some kind of a celebration for Ronald Reagan, and they had somebody do a show like this.
Minstrel show?
Yeah, and it was, like, really incredibly uncomfortable.
In the 80s?
And, like... Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I remember the person who was doing art in the show most recently was doing it in reference to that happened in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And just, like, talking about, like, what a strange, like, paradigm it was or whatever. But I think that the whole thing is super... Just, like, anytime I see, like, something in, like, an antiques shop or anything that seems racist, I'm just like, why is... I don't want to see these things anymore. I just... Yeah. Yeah, it seems like they shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Or they should be in some kind of a museum that's, like, to, you know, like, the Museum of Tolerance or something. Like, there should be a museum like that. You know, to show people that these terrible things happen.
And all the old, like, racist, like, toys and stuff in the movie are Spike's personal collection.
Really?
Yeah, he collects that stuff.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that he's making an effort to not have it in circulation anymore or whatever. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Have you ever seen the movie Ghost World?
I know what you're talking about. I remember that.
There's a part of it where she finds a picture, like an old picture that looks like that, and they're like in her art class, they're like, wow, this is really, like, thought-provoking. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know if it's thought-provoking for them to, like, bring it back up again. Like, depending on the context, you know, it's not, it shouldn't go, it shouldn't be those kinds of things. I don't know. I just feel like it shouldn't be normalized again or whatever. It's like, I kind of wish they just weren't around because it's so terrible.
Yeah, that's kind of part of my movie, this the complicated discussion of, well, what do you do about all, like, the old racist, like, TV and movies and, like, toys? Like, do you get rid of it? Do you keep it? Like, what's the right thing to do?
True. Yeah. It does raise questions about that. But it's kind of terrible how the whole thing backfires on him in this movie. Like, you don't want to believe that, like, history can repeat itself, or that, like, somebody could say something really bad and that, like, it could turn out that everybody loves it. Like, and right now it's, like, a scary time in the world. It's a scary time right now, and I just...
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's really scary. Yeah, I hope that things can change soon, because it's... I feel like some things are evolving in a positive way as time goes on, but then there's other people that are just, like, pushing back, that have all this hatred and racism, and it's like, I just really... Yeah, I hope that good overcomes.
Well,
about it, I saw, like... maybe the last third of it or something. But I asked Joel what had happened before that point, just because I was like, what in the world is going on in this movie? Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense if you don't know, like, what's happening. But it did seem like it didn't... Was there, like, a romantic storyline at all? It seemed like it was mostly...
There was kind of one, but you barely see any of it. There's, like, maybe two or three scenes, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, it seemed more focused on the subject of, like, this being... This, it's like a menstrual show, right?
Yeah.
Like a... they were bringing that back up, and it was all the characters that were involved in the project, and their feelings about it, and the audience response to it, and, like, the network and stuff. And, like, I think that it didn't get overcomplicated with other, like, interpersonal relationships as much as, I don't know. I feel like with Malcolm X or something, that's, like, almost a biopic. It's, like, his life story. It's not dealing with the issues alone. But this felt more like it was dealing... It was centered around a few characters and dealing with the issues, mainly. And I liked that about it.
Yeah, it's kind of more focused compared to some other Spike movies, but it's also pretty... like, wild, and it's, like, what's trying to get across.
Yeah. Well, I hope that was okay. I didn't really prepare anything ahead of time.
No.
But,
it's fine.
You know, Spike Lee's...
Yeah, but...
I feel like there's often, like, a big message at the end, but this one I felt like, it was a strong message the whole way through, I felt like. Yeah, probably. That makes sense. It's tough, the subject, and it kind of has, like, this... I don't even know how to put it. It's like a... You would almost think of it as like a farce. But it's like scary how some of it feels believable as being something that could happen. And yeah, it feels... It feels scary to watch it.
Oh, yeah, to me, it's a horror movie. In some ways.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
Got anything else? Or is that it?
Do I have any other feelings about it? What year was this movie
made? 2000.
Oh, really? Joel was telling me it was a digital format?
Yeah, shot on early digital cameras. I think one of the first major movies was shot on early digital. And it looks kind of rough, which is kind of the point.
Yeah. Yeah. I did get kind of a... almost like a documentary feel from it. Was there a part where there were interviews like it was a documentary or no? There, it felt, maybe the fuzziness of the camera effect made it feel a little bit more like it was, like home video or something to me. But that kind of reminded me of a documentary, which I think also makes it kind of eerie and creepy too.
It's the same.
But I think it was
the same cinematographer as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ellen.
I love that movie.
Kouros. I'm not sure how you say her last name.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There were some cool angles and shots that I made, like that. I didn't think about till right now, but now I remember them. That I'm thinking about them. Yeah, I guess that I think it was well made and really scary. That was my takeaway from it.
Shake 'em down. Black Chevy, Mau Mau, gats ready. Blow, blow, black deadly, femme fatale. Underground, rats in this rat race and black race. Cat sell out to the black face and red grin. Laugh not my light skin. BS.
All right. What are we talking about now?
I was looking for a specific part in the book, Facing Blackness, and Ashley Clark brings up that, the media perception, even though it looks like things are, quote-unquote, improving, things really aren't improving that much, because, he brings up in a foreword the last three... women to win the last three women, black women to win Oscars, and it's Monique, Octavia Spencer, and Lupita Nyong'o. And Monique played a welfare queen, and Octavia Spencer played a mammy.
Octavia Spencer was the help.
Yeah. And Lupita Nyong'o was a slave. So it's...
Yep.
Even though on paper it looks like, hey, they won an Oscar, but still, but it's the same shit from, Manton Moreland era. Nothing has changed that much.
Yeah. I mean, even going back to Halle Berry in Monsters Ball, that's a particular type of role that, can be seen as not necessarily a good...
I guess Whoopi in Ghost... That might be the only...
Yes. That was Psychics Everywhere celebrated her victory.
Because I don't think she's meant to be... the character is black. It just happens to be black.
Right. No, she's Whoopi Goldberg in that role, which is why she deserved an Oscar.
Hmm. Man, that's...
Have you seen... You've seen Ghost, right?
On TV in parts, but it's been a while.
Okay. She's the best part of that movie.
And also in the foreword, Ashley Clark brings up the classic movie, Exodus, Gods and Kings. Because...
Classic!
Ridley Scott? Because he was Ridley Scott cast white actors to play Egyptians, if you remember.
What are you talking about?
He cast Christian Bale and Joel Edgerton as the leads in that movie, because yeah, you
those
know.
Those are our greatest black actors.
Well, no, we can't get into it. So, like, this is more a personal thing for people, but, like black Africans usually mean sub-Saharan, and, like, Northern Africans are, like, not black. Sure. It really depends on personal preference, but anyway, but yeah, so like...
Wait, what?
The Northern Africans aren't considered black Africans, they're considered Africans. But like, if you go sub-Sahara, okay. Then that's considered... Then it's a thing that you see sometimes, like, the first African to ever win a gold medal Olympics was Moroccan. But usually say, like, the first black African to win a gold medal was Kenyan. So like, you see little differences like that in some things.
Sure.
Yeah, it's all personal preference. But, like, you know, and really, Scott, when he was asked about Exodus and why he didn't cast Middle Eastern actors or Egyptian actors... He basically said, like, I can't cast, like, Mohammed so-and-so from such and such because it won't get financed, which is true, which brings up, like, the sad part of the industry.
Yeah, he's not wrong, but that's a very racist answer.
Yeah, it's very racist.
Like, if you want to talk about the inherent racism built into the film industry, you don't say... you don't say, I wouldn't hire any, I want to say something racist to make a joke, but you know what, I'm just going to not do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the director, Terrence Nance, who did the really good movie, an Oversimplification of Her Beauty, which is kind of, I guess, a docudrama. I don't know really how to explain even the structure of that movie. It's a really cool thing. And then he had a retort about Exodus is just brown-faced minstrelsy and, like, rewriting African history as European history. Which...
Sure.
I see his point. But,
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it's... I mean, that's like... When it goes to when it comes to making movies that take place in a certain time period back in the day, it's like people want to be race blind somehow by casting white actors, usually, or you know more European types if they are feeling like they want to really say something.
Yeah.
And it's garbage.
Yeah, it's silly. What was it? Did you like the commercials? Before, I think it's like the premiere of the show. The Timmy.
Yes, they were really good. Da Bomb and
Timmy Hill.
Timmy Hill N-word.
Yeah. The Ghetto.
Yeah, it reminded me of some RoboCop stuff.
Oh, yeah, I totally see that. I love that, the Timmy
Carter. I want a full-length movie about Da Bomb.
Da Bomb shows up in Chirac. You see it?
125% malt liquor.
And you get the testimonies. It's such a great little thing. But, like, Da Bomb shows up again in Chirac and... I don't think Timmy Hilfiger shows up in anything else. But I love the running joke of, like, everyone wants Timmy clothes.
Yeah. The first time he says it, it was Man Ray says it, like, oh, no, give me those really good, he says the name of the label, jeans. And I thought he was making a joke about Tommy Hilfiger. Mm-hmm.
But it turns out, no, in this world, that's a real type of genes that exist.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, like, a commentary on, like, the way Reebok, like, specifically targets that demographic, right? Like,
you have to get 100%. These
kind of shoes.
You know? Yeah. Like, in a scene with the Mau Maus where they're in a pool hall, and, who was it? I think, like, the about three of them that who are black are wearing FUBU clothes, and the other two are wearing this, like, you know, quote unquote, like, you know, like big oversized clothes, but with no label. And then MC Search, playing 116th Black, he is wearing a Mark Echo wear, which, if you know,
sure.
Do you get where I'm coming from?
Is Mark Echo known to try to be a, I don't know if this is a good term, a wigger?
Basically, yeah. And
okay,
it's just funny.
I will never say that again. I feel very uncomfortable. But
I understand, but like
I couldn't think of any other way to say it.
Yeah, so it's funny that Mark Echo wear the white guy's wearing, and black people are wearing FUBU.
Yeah.
Which is 100% on purpose,
right?
And I guess like you can relate this to you have like the well-meaning white Jewish woman who's like has a degree in African American studies, talking about like the media,
yeah,
the defense of like hire black people, complain about PC culture. Tell people to lighten up, it's all a joke, and talk about Martin Luther King. And it's like, Jesus Christ, right. That's so yeah. Shitty.
No, she hasn't. I mean, she's got to figure it out. We should listen to her. I mean, she's got degrees.
Yeah. And,
I do really like that, in that Delacroix was just, like, just mean to her. And I can't remember. I was trying to remember specifically.
He said,
was making me laugh.
He said, oh, you had sex with a Negro in college.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have a master's in blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you had sex with a like, just, like, it doesn't matter. Your education, you think you know. Like, I don't. Like, at one point, like, that's. Like, she did go to school, but also, she's acting like.
Yeah,
she knows exactly what those people are feeling, you know, the people in the movie.
Yeah, and let's see, so I'm sure you noticed the network connection.
Oh yeah.
Open
up your windows.
Yeah, and it has a structure, some structure to network. Although, like, this is a good way, sure. Like a good reference thing, because like. It's totally restructured for like Spike's purposes,
yes.
Instead of just like copy and paste. Like I feel like I'm so between Tarantino. I'm not trying to, but like you know what I'm getting at. Like some.
Wait, what do you think he did? What are you talking about?
No.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm not trying to.
He didn't whole cloth take a movie.
Yeah. And like you know, he modernized it with, like, you know, a live stream of the murder, which I think is done really well. And, like, the book, Face of Blackness, brings up, like, ISIS did that with, like, live streams of killing people. And yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ, I never even thought that connection until I read the book.
And people try to, you know, racist people do that now, you know, put them thinking, like, Twitch streams of them going into churches and killing people. Like, yeah. It's not an organized effort, but it's not that different.
Yeah, like, he kind of predicted the future of, like, what the internet can do, which is kind of scary. Which is crazy, because, like, the year before you had American yeah. Pie, which had, like, you know, a live stream webcam thing for a different purpose, but here it's like, oh no, this is what it'll actually probably be used for.
Yeah, it's a scene where a guy fucks a pie, and in this movie, some guy fucked. No, wait.
Yeah, I mean, but like, yeah, but And with facing the crowd, the Elia Kazan? Elia?
Yeah. Yes, I think it's Elia Kazan. Yeah. That's what I say.
Yeah, I don't say Elia, because Elia, I think, is... This is, I always assume it's a woman's name. Because it ends in the A.
Well, I always assume Ashley is a woman's name, so...
He's British, so... I think it's over there more common. Mm. I'm...
Sure.
And he lives in America now, because he... that's Midjourner. He does, like, film programming stuff in New York City at the BAM, I think.
I thought it was because of our healthcare.
Yeah, he left England for our healthcare system.
Excellent.
Yeah. But facing the crowd, because facing the crowd, I haven't seen it yet, but if I understand, that's a big reference point of, like, and I see, like, people talk about Trump with a face in the crowd, which I can, you know, like, a populist guy kind of gets a little too big, and apparently face in the crowd, like, the catchphrase when Hinecutt had him go, ooh-wee! Apparently that's stolen, not stolen, but, like, that's straight up a reference to face in the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else? The producers? Like, is another reference point, like,
mm-hmm.
What else?
I didn't even think about that until Sarah said it.
Yeah, what else was there? I can't think of any other, like, major things that went into this. And I guess, like, Melvin Van Peebles in general. Because, like, because he's thanked in it. And this feels like something Melvin Van Peebles would have done if he was given the chance.
Yeah.
But also, like, I think it said that Spike was encouraged by Classified X, the TV documentary Melvin did on the subject of representation in Hollywood and TV. Yeah. And apparently, like, when Spike, this one, Charlie Rose, from, like, 2000, where, like, he basically said, like, the year 2000 was coming, so he realized he kind of wanted to reflect on the representation of black people in media in America, and
how it hasn't changed. Yeah,
and like, he's like, 100 years, it's still the same.
Yep.
And this movie is 20 years old this October, and I don't think things will change that much by October. But,
Do you feel like, as a society, we're more aware of what is blatant racism, at least?
Yeah, I think
whether or not we're going to do anything about it.
I think, yeah, we're definitely more aware. But, it depends on things like, if, you know, the bigwigs at Hollywood want to make a change and, you know, say, like, screw them.
They don't.
Yeah. Like, screw the money. Like, why not be better? But, you know, I don't know. That's, like, one of the big questions the movie brings up of us, like, you know, it's just, what if, like, in that system, like, what can you do?
And, you know, making a big statement, like, shooting the things that didn't actually solve the problems, it seemed. I mean, obviously it didn't. So, can we talk about what I don't like about that ending? I'm with it, with the whole, we need to make a big statement and actually kill this guy. Like, that's... doesn't surprise me for a Spike Lee movie. But I didn't feel like the Jada Pinkett Smith going and shooting Delacroix, like, having, like, lost sanity because her brother... and the guy she was supposed to be in love with were both killed. You know, like, I'm going to kill Delacroix. Like, he is the root of the problem, which also, now that I say it out loud, obviously must have been part of the point. But it does feel, for her character, it feels...
strange.
weird.
Yeah.
She didn't have a moment of, like, being cuckoo at any point, and everyone else was kind of, like, had that, like, part where they were just like, I don't care, I want the money, or I don't care, I'm famous now.
Yeah. They were all sellouts. Like, no one... Like, she was the only level-headed one until the end, which is... I don't know. Again, I feel like there has to be some missing scenes leading up to that. But it just... It kind of doesn't make any sense. It's just like Spike had an idea of, like, oh, I know how to end. He's bleeding out, and he has to watch a tape of, like, you know, blackface in Hollywood.
Yeah, she... watch your tape. Like, okay. I guess I will.
Yeah. And
I don't have a choice. I'm dying.
And you know, we get to see a tape as he bleeds out, and it covers the whole stuff. Like you see, Gone with the Wind. What's that called? Is it called Gone with the Wind? The Civil War movie. Yeah, Gone with the Wind is what it's called. You see, like, you know, Hattie McDaniel. You see, like, Shirley Temple. Like, the Shirley Temple one is the one that, like, always gets me every time. It's like, even that, like, family-friendly entertainment. That's just...
Yep. And it wasn't weird.
No, it was just, like, totally seen as okay. You see, like, Ames and Andy, which comes up in the movie. Which, right. I kind of wish they would have gone into, like, Spencer Williams and a little bit and talk about maybe him, but... I don't know, it was pretty stuffed already.
Yep. Over 2 hours.
Yeah. And in the book Facing Blackness, there's a point where Ashley writes that apparently there was a Blackface Mitchell show that was on BBC that was canceled in 1978.
Yeah.
Because it had a...
Now, I've been told that people in England are less racist than us. But with this whole Brexit thing, I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Oh, we're basically wrapping up, but Pierre Delacroix's real name is Peerless Dotham, which I think is an equally ridiculous name. The Spike Lee names in this movie are kind of out of control.
Yeah. A Peerless is, yeah, I mean, but that's not even the weirdest name in the thing, so...
I think Flipper is a worse name than Peerless, but still, some of the names here are just like, what are you doing, Spike? Are you just having fun?
Peerless sounds kind of cool, I don't know, but yeah, Flipper, nobody's like, oh, Flipper.
Yeah, and like Womack, I think is a reference to Bobby Womack. Mm-hmm. I think Womack does sing in it too, but what else? Man Ray goes to Man Ray. How fucking, like, some of these names are stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, and the Spike Lee cam comes up in the first 5 minutes too.
Yep. Had to get it in.
Yeah. Which is also a strange choice of, like, you know, this is not a normal Spike movie because it happens so early on.
Yeah.
But, I've been rewatching scenes from Lore, the Polish mermaid horror musical, and there's a couple sequences.
Lure.
Yeah, the Lore. It's...
Oh, you're saying Lore. Lure.
Fishing... Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. It's a great...
Yeah, I do. I just want to make sure the audience knows.
Blur. Whatever.
There we go.
And it's... there's a couple sequences where you get the Spike Lee dolly cam in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Bamboozled, it's on DVD. Man, it's not streaming anywhere. Maybe when it comes out. On Criterion, it will be.
So, like, a March or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty soon.
And it's been a long time coming. Are you glad you watched this movie?
Of course I'm glad I watched this movie.
Do you understand why...
There's very...
Do you get why I love this movie so much? Does it make sense?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Do you want me to essay out why you like it?
Wondering. Okay. Would you recommend this to people, to like everyone, or would you be like watch like Malcolm X first or Dark Thing first, and then move up to this?
I think.
This is like a shotgun blast of this like a whole bunch of stuff in your face.
You know, it's actually so entertaining. I feel like without the context, somebody might misread what the movie is actually about.
Hmm.
And especially with the way it ends, maybe feel like, oh, they made a bad movie or something like that. So I would be hesitant to be like, hey, you should check this out. You haven't watched any other Spike Lee? Who cares? But are you knocking out a beat? Yeah, I mean, like, people who already know Spike Lee movies, like, somebody who's seen, like, Do the Right Thing, or maybe even just Black Klansman. Like, I think that's probably enough of a primer to be like, okay, watch this one now.
Hmm. Yeah. What did I say? Apparently, critics at the time were very mixed on this. Like, got a lot of, like...
Yeah, Rotten Tomatoes is, like, not fresh.
Which is kind of crazy, because, like... Because the big complaint at the time was... I was like, yeah, we know, but things are better now. And it's like... No, did you watch the movie? That's the point. It's not better now. And there's a review.
Did you...
A review from The Guardian where someone said, oh, this is just outdated. Like, we don't do blackface anymore. It's like, you weren't paying attention to the movie at all, were you?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, did you read the Roger Ebert review?
I read excerpts of it, but...
I haven't read it, but I don't imagine... I can't imagine what he would have said about it.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. It's just like... I don't know how to say this. In a easy way. But, like, whenever I see, like, an article about this online by a white person, I immediately don't, like... There's just some... Like, they always miss something... Because, like,
yeah,
I don't know, like, is it racist to say, like I feel like, white people won't fully get this movie or get the impact of the movie? Because I think they, I don't know, like, overall, yes, but at the same time, it's like, there's certain things, like, if you're a person of color and you watch this movie, it just, you connect with it in a different way.
I mean, together we make one white person, right? Are you half?
Basically.
Yeah, so, I mean, but we've gone out of our way to educate ourselves about what we're even talking about, and you've gone much further than I have. I mean, you're not being racist, you're being, you're generalizing... Probably more than you should, but I don't know. Hey, white people, prove me wrong.
Because I've seen a couple articles and reviews of this where it's like, you're missing some of the nuance of this. I won't say where I read it.
I mean,
just like some people, it's like, do some more education. This movie's kind of, I don't know. It's not easy to...
In this era, especially, like, it's so easy to see how people don't like to be called out on things that they are outside of their field of vision, like their life experience. No, they don't like that. So I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. Like, it's just kind of where I read this, some like stuff on this. It's like, this makes me cringe a little bit with this movie in particular.
Yeah.
The next episode. This I love this movie. I think it's a deeply flawed masterpiece. It feels like, in some ways, it feels custom made for me. And,
Beetlejuice.
Yeah. But, coming up.
No, what movie are you talking about?
Bamboozled, like.
Oh, this movie, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying coming up next.
No. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And there's still so much more stuff to get into with this movie, but, I'm watching a movie by, I don't know, buy the DVD now, or wait for the Blu-ray, I don't fucking know. Just, if you think you can handle the movie, then go for it. But it's blunt force trauma of this like a deeply uncomfortable subject in American history.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of expert level Spike Lee too.
Yeah.
Like, I think you have to be a fan. If you're not a fan of the movies that are universally considered good movies, you this might just be not good for you.
Yeah.
Then again, if you're not a fan of his universally liked movies, what are you listening to this podcast for?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Next episode is Dancer in the Dark. This is February. So, I don't know. The documentary episode will come out eventually. I have watched a Kobe documentary so far.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for me now to date this podcast. The man died yesterday. Yeah. And that's pretty upsetting. Even though I have, you know, you can have complicated feelings about the man. I certainly do. But it's still pretty upsetting.
Yeah. And yeah. Yeah, he had children and a family, so that makes it extra worse.
Yeah.
So, keep, I think her name is Vanessa Bryant. Keep her in your thoughts and prayers. Whatever yeah. your creed is. So, Dancer in the Dark with Alexandria Daniels. So, that's another fun movie. Right? Lars von Trier is going to be a nice light movie.
From what I understand, it's a laugh a minute.
Yeah, it's going to be funnier than Europa. Or,
yeah. It's like
Breaking the Waves.
It's basically a remake of Dumb and Dumber, right?
No, that's the Idiots. What's that movie he did? The really offensive one? Is it The Idiots or something?
I don't know. I didn't watch any of his Dogma 95 shit.
Oh, I've heard that one is strange, to put lightly. So, yeah. That's it. See you guys next time.
Yeah.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com and Spotify and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.